This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Another deadly weekend. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Monday, June 7, glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Three people are dead and a handful of others were wounded after a drive-by shooting at a graduation party in the Miami area.
A technical issue forced a mild plane scare for Vice President Kamala Harris as she begins talks about the border surge.
Speaking of the southern border, what would be a better immigration system and what would it look like? Hear what the experts are saying.
And the latest in efforts to steal your money, crooks impersonating the likes of Amazon.
What's going on is sometimes people are getting calls or they might be getting a text, and it could be Amazon, it could be Chase, it could be a government agency. But what the scammers are doing is they're trying to portray this as something that's terribly urgent.
Susan Tompor at the Detroit Free Press has an update on the latest scams. Three people have been killed and as many as six others injured after another shooting in the Miami area. This time it happened at a graduation party when police say people in either one or two vehicles opened fire on a crowd in a strip mall parking lot at around 2 a.m. yesterday morning. One of the three people killed was 20-year-old Tylisha Taylor, who worked for the Dade Correctional Institution. Miami-Dade Police Director Freddie Ramirez says two men also died when their car crashed into a wall at Miami-Dade's college campus in Kendall while fleeing the scene.
One vehicle that was fleeing sped across 104th Street and crashed into the wall.
At least one gun was in the car, but authorities did not identify the exact connection to the shooting. The murders follow last week's shooting that left three people killed and 20 wounded in a mass shooting that remains unsolved. Another shooting on May 28 in the Wynwood area killed one person and injured six others. West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, who holds the key Democratic vote in the evenly divided Senate, says he will oppose a sweeping election and campaign finance reform bill and instead encouraged his colleagues to pass voting rights legislation that can garner bipartisan backing. In an op-ed for the Charleston Gazette-Mail, Mr. Manchin said he plans to vote against a measure called For the People Act, which has passed the House and is set to be taken up by the Senate at the end of this month. His reason? It's too partisan.
We're looking every way we can to bring this country together and unite the country. That's what I'm doing. And I think anybody, whether it be a Democrat or a Republican that's sitting today in the Senate, knows who I am. And I've always been about bipartisanship.
He was on CBS's Face the Nation even before he announced his decision to vote against the For the People Act. The measure was unlikely to advance in the Senate, where 60 votes are needed to end debate on a bill and overcome a filibuster. The first international trip as vice president for Kamala Harris did not get off to the smooth start that everyone would have liked. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Air Force Two was forced to fly back to Joint Base Andrews due to a technical issue about 30 minutes after it took off. A spokeswoman said there were no major safety concerns. The vice president departed in a different plane about an hour and a half later and ultimately arrived in the capital of Guatemala. Ms. Harris is traveling to Guatemala and Mexico, part of her role in leading the Biden administration's diplomatic efforts to address the root causes of migration at the southern border, a task she was given in March. She is set to spend 2 days in meetings. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. Ms. Harris has since come under criticism for not having visited the border. Fox News said Saturday marked the 74th day that she had neither traveled to U.S. border communities nor held a news conference in connection with her duties as manager of the administration's response to the border crisis. Coming up next, what a better immigration system would look like. In the sport of business, we're all players, and with the game always changing, you need to be versatile. So does your wardrobe. You want both style and comfort to look as good as you feel inside the office or out. That's what Cuts Clothing is all about. Cuts Clothing keeps you sharp wherever the game takes you, from the boardroom to the bar to the gym. How? They reinvented men's clothing, starting with the t-shirt. Their Pika Tri-Blend fabric is buttery soft, wrinkle-free, and keeps its shape. Everything I've worn from Cuts is next-level comfort. Their polos, hoodies, and crew sweatshirts, all classics, made modern with custom-engineered fabrics you have to wear to believe. So versatile, you'll never need to take them off, and so comfortable, you won't want to. It's not just the lifestyle. It's not just clothing. It's office leisure apparel for the sport of business. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing.
Hey, thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday. The Biden administration has struggled to address a sizable upswing in the number of migrants arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border. And processing delays have led to what some lawmakers, but not the White House, have called a growing humanitarian crisis, heightening political tensions in Washington. Yet as reporter Matthew Brown at USA Today points out, the situation at the southern border has not brought about action on Capitol Hill. He looked at why. Matt set this up.
It's been 25 years of seeing really different flashpoints in the immigration debate in this country. For instance, during the Clinton administration, you saw the Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act, which I don't think either Democrats or Republicans look back on fondly today. The failures of comprehensive immigration reform under both George W. Bush and Barack Obama, and then obviously the entire Trump years. The reforms that we've seen over the years and the stasis around this, I think the takeaway shows that obviously, Democrats and Republicans have both really dug in on this issue and not necessarily even hardened their views as much as the discourse would show, but that they just don't trust each other on the issue to even get something bipartisan out of this. There were points where we saw that there might be some glimmers here and there, some tiny reforms around the edges, but the vast sweeping reforms that, for instance, Joe Biden just proposed, that doesn't seem like it's like a possibility at the moment. Baby steps look like they're necessary on immigration.
Boy, all right. So, and the flashpoints here are generally what? Amnesty for those who are here already and some sort of path to legalization, right? I mean, those generally the ones that create the most emotion in this debate.
Right, definitely. So for Democrats and liberals, the biggest issue has been creating a more accepting, more streamlined, more modernized immigration system. And for Republicans, the question has always been around enforcement and what does successful enforcement look like? The issue that really has been those have been the sticking points. And the issue has been a question of trust on both sides of the aisle. On Republicans, for instance, don't trust that if they allow for increased amnesty or increased pathways for visas for migrant workers to come here or reforms for other forms of legal immigration, that they will end up getting the border enforcement they really want. Whereas for Democrats, they are increasingly skeptical that Republicans are actually interested in having even legal immigration into the country. So it's a question of trust, and that's been issue that has been growing over the past 25 years that we've seen.
Well, we're speaking with Matthew Brown, White House reporter at USA Today. He's written a piece entitled "What Would a Better U.S. Immigration System Look Like?" They talked to the experts. Somebody in your story, I think it was a congressman from Texas, said, "Talk to the border towns, get their input." What do border towns say?
Yeah, when you actually look down at the Rio Grande Valley, it's a very different situation than I think what oftentimes we in Washington and around the country think of the issue. This isn't necessarily it's a year-round issue when you're talking about what border towns are actually thinking and what border enforcement, what the communities themselves ask what they actually need out of this. The surges that we see seasonally or annually aren't the thing that are driving the discourse down there. The question is really, how do you actually get undocumented families reunited? How do you get the resources to border enforcement that they so desire? The questions are a lot more fundamental and a lot more routine than I think what the Washington discourse will often describe it as.
Wow. So part of this, too, is trying to get at the reasons for why so many people choose to leave their countries, say, in Central America and then come through Mexico and try to reach the U.S. border. But there's this notion that by throwing money at it, I guess that will help. I'm not sure that that's the case. But what about the kind of the root causes of why these folks are trying to get here in the first place? Like,
right.
And I know it's poverty and lack of opportunity, things like that. But I mean, is that something that's fixable by us?
Yeah, this is the huge debate that you see among a lot of different immigration experts, where oftentimes some immigration experts who actually might be very pro-increased immigration into the U.S. will say, these are not issues that these countries are able to solve on their own, which is exactly why we should be increasing border, increasing visa access for them to come here to the U.S. where they can actually make a better life for themselves. On the other side, you have restrictionists who argue there's no reason for us to be sending all this aid if it's not going to actually address the root causes of immigration.
Thanks, Matt. Matthew Brown, White House reporter at USA Today. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
A key Democratic senator says he will not vote for the largest overhaul of U.S. election law in at least a generation, leaving no plausible path forward for legislation that his party and the White House have portrayed as crucial for protecting access to the ballot. Joe Manchin of West Virginia spoke with Fox.
I think it's the wrong piece of legislation to bring our country together and unite our country, and I'm not supporting that because I think it would divide us further.
The bill would restrict partisan gerrymandering of congressional districts, strike down hurdles to voting, and bring transparency to a murky campaign finance system. Democrats have pushed the legislation as an antidote to restrictive state voting laws sweeping the country.
Number two.
With Kamala Harris visiting Guatemala and Mexico on her first foreign trip as vice president, the Biden administration today is expected to announce new measures to fight smuggling and trafficking. The trip got off to a rocky start when Harris's plane returned to Joint Base Andrews in Maryland about 30 minutes after takeoff because of a problem with the landing gear. Harris departed on another plane and landed late Sunday in Guatemala City.
Number three.
The U.S. surpassed another milestone Sunday in its efforts to vaccinate people against the coronavirus. The CDC says over 300 million vaccine doses have so far been administered across the country. About 49.3% of the U.S. population over 12 is fully vaccinated. The Supreme Court is being asked to decide whether it's sex discrimination for the government to require only men to register for the draft when they turn 18. The question of whether it's unconstitutional to require men but not women to register could be viewed as one with little practical impact. The last time there was a draft was during the Vietnam War. The domestic box office is getting back to normal after its highly successful first weekend. A Quiet Place Part 2 fell 59% at the North American box office, leaving room for the third movie in the Conjuring franchise to take first place. Warner Brothers' The Conjuring: The Devil Made Me Do It earned an estimated $24 million, making it the biggest R-rated opening of the pandemic. A Quiet Place sequel earned $19.5 million.
All right, thank you, Jen. Coming up next, the latest in scams.
Metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the course keeps changing right before your eyes. Whoa! And in order to maneuver it, you need an expert by your side. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the tech solutions you need to help you get out in front and stay ahead of the game. Whew. For advice on solutions like XPS 13 laptops powered by Intel Evo platform, call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for being with us. We haven't gone a minute without some new trend from scammers. Now we're seeing an uptick in texts and phone calls from scammers alerting us to suspicious activity. Some are pretending to be from the Amazon fraud department. Susan Tompor, reporter at the Detroit Free Press, says scammers are trying to warn you of possible fraud on your account to make you so nervous you don't think twice about what you're doing next. Susan, what's going on?
What's going on is sometimes people are getting calls or they might be getting a text, and it could be Amazon, it could be Chase, it could be a government agency. But what the scammers are doing is they're trying to portray this as something that's terribly urgent, and they're going to warn you that your account's been locked, you know, with a bank or restricted due to unusual activity, or you're going to be told that somebody made a $500 purchase or a $700 purchase regarding Amazon, and often some of the robocalls are telling you to press 1 to report a phony charge. What they're doing is they're trying to create this sense of urgency, and of course our first reaction is we've got to do something. Somebody's stealing our money. We've got to rush. Well, that's exactly what the scammers want you to do. They want you to lose it a little bit and panic, and then you're not thinking straight. And that does happen. As much as people want to say, oh, that could never happen to me, forget it. It can happen to you. These guys are really good. They know how to target routine human behavior, and they know how to trigger fear, and nothing more fearful than thinking somebody's going to drain your bank account.
Sure.
or charge something, you know. So You do need to be, I guess, be as we always talk about these things, you want to be aware of, you know, what could be happening.
When you get to when you get a call that says it gives you the option to press one, is that coming first from a robocall and then you're connected to like a live scammer person?
It's connected to a robocall, and I'm not sure if you're connected to a live scammer person on that press one. I do know they're telling you not to do that. They're saying just hang up. You know, don't try to get too fancy on this stuff. Hang up, and, you know, move on. Mm-hmm. You know, we've gotten warnings from the Attorney General here in Michigan that there's this surge. A company called Umail, which has a robo-blocking app, said consumers are regularly receiving 100 million to 150 million robocalls a month from fraudsters claiming to be from Amazon. So you don't need to do that. I mean, if you're an Amazon shopper, as many people are, of course you want to, you know, if you're really worried, you call Amazon. You know, you contact Amazon. You don't use any numbers that you get in a link or anything like that. You look up your statements. You look up, you know, sometimes you look up things online, but then again, we've warned people about fake customer service lines, so, you know, you got to be a little bit careful there, too.
Yeah, boy. We're speaking with Susan Tompor, personal finance reporter at the Detroit Free Press, part of the USA Today network. Her piece is called Alerts About Suspicious Activity Surge as Crooks Impersonate Amazon. So what, I mean, what's the best way to verify? I guess with Amazon, you could just go in your cart, right, and see if something has shown up on there, but what else are you supposed to do?
I think just contacting the company is good. You know, I think the first thing to do is just don't react. I know that sounds really crazy, but some of these are just so obvious now that you really don't want to react. Amazon isn't often, you know, calling you about these sorts of things. You know, so your best bet is just to ignore some of this stuff, and you definitely don't want to give out personal information.
Susan Tompor, personal finance reporter at the Detroit Free Press. It's 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
We are America's First News. This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday, June 7. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. 3 dead, 6 injured in a drive-by shooting at a Miami-area graduation party. Vice President Harris in Guatemala for immigration talks. Wall Street Journal says 8 nursing home managers in New Jersey received coronavirus hazard pay even though they earned too much to qualify. Soccer, USA beat Mexico 3-2 in overtime to win the Nations League tournament. Simone Biles has captured her 7th U.S. gymnastics title. Roger and Serena out at the French Open. And a lost wallet returned after 46 years. That story in about 20 minutes. Time for a business update, and it's brought to you by Indeed. When you're hiring, there's no luxury of time, so instead of waiting for people to see your sponsored post, invite them to apply. More at Indeed.com/credit. Subscriptions boomed during the coronavirus pandemic as Americans largely stuck in shutdown mode flocked to digital entertainment and signed up for regular home delivery of boxes of items like clothes and chocolate. But what really set the past year apart was the increase in subscriptions in the hard-hit services sector. Owners of restaurants, hotels, home repair companies, and others upended their traditional business models to try subscriptions and often found more interest and revenue than they anticipated. It's a story by Andrew Van Dam, reporter at The Washington Post. Andrew, what are you hearing?
During the pandemic, of course, we have seen subscriptions grow pretty much across the board. That includes places where we're really used to subscriptions going, such as digital services, something like Netflix, HBO Max, something like that. That includes traditional good subscriptions, you know, the profusion of subscription boxes, you know, Stitch Fix, Subscribe and Save. But the reason that we felt like this was a unique moment is that subscriptions are popping up in places we never would have expected before, in-person services like hotels and restaurants.
Okay. So meaning what? Well, give an example.
Oh, geez. So here in D.C., a couple high-end restaurants, including, you know, Rose's Luxury, the top, the cream of the crop there, during the pandemic banded together to form a sort of supper club. And if you sign up for, what is it, like $360, they send you each week a different, for 6 weeks, a different meal from a sort of celebrity chef in the area. It's brought to your house. They sort of do this really fancy, you know, candle lights and recommended music to play during the meal and all this business. And definitely not something you would have seen before the pandemic, but this mix of desperation, you know, restaurants were among the hardest hit sectors in the COVID crisis, and opportunity. We suddenly have the technology to process subscriptions and to deliver food and to deliver this experience that we wouldn't have had before. Of course, also, it helps that here in D.C. and I'm sure elsewhere in the country, you can now deliver liquor as well.
Yeah. Jeez, there was a great quote from a winemaker in your story who said, this was really about flipping the business model for restaurants, paying before eating instead of eating before paying.
Exactly. And geez, if you're a restaurant owner, I'm sure you can see what effective operation right there.
Yeah. Wow. We're speaking with Andrew Van Dam, reporter at The Washington Post. He's got a good story entitled Everything's Becoming a Subscription and the Pandemic is Partly to Blame. How big could this sector get?
Enormous. So right now, subscriptions take up something like $650 billion. But UBS, for example, predicts that by 2025, which isn't that far from now, you know, that's 4 years, $1.5 trillion could be the size of the subscription economy. Think of that in relation to GDP. It's mind-blowing. Like, just an enormous chunk of consumer spending is going to be flowing out of our wallets every month in dribs and drabs.
Yeah. And I didn't consider this, too, until you included it in your story, but this is a lot about data, just being able to have somebody's contact info, right?
Oh, geez, and not just contact info. You know, their payment info, their buying habits, their preferences. You can market much more effectively to someone who's a regular subscriber who's coming back, you know, time after time.
There was a stat, too, in your story. It said something like, I don't know what the average American has, 2 to 3 subscriptions, but I think, isn't that just for, like, digital television? I mean,
yes,
I think we all have, yeah, more than that.
That is definitely lowballing it. All of the people we talk to, like anyone who's in the industry and looking to get into subscriptions, they've done their market research, and they say, yeah, it's probably like 5 to 6 for the typical American and probably like 10-plus for a lot of what they call super subscribers, people who are really into this economy. And that is, of course, a growing segment. But as you can imagine, it's hard to remember everything you're subscribed to. So that's the fundamental problem of subscription membership is sort of the is that everyone loses track of a subscription. For businesses, that's great. But for data collectors and consumers, that can get a little tricky.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. Andrew Van Dam, reporter at The Washington Post. Coming up next, weird things that happen when you win $1 million. When you start a small business, you do it because it's something you love, but it brings new challenges you might not have thought of, mainly HR. HR compliance issues can cause complex problems that, let's face it, you don't have time for, and it's got to be done right or it could destroy your business. Bambee, spelled B-A-M-B-E-E, was created specifically for small business. Get a dedicated HR manager available by phone, email, or real-time chat to craft HR policy and maintain your compliance, all for just $99 a month. And there's no risk. It's month-to-month with no hidden fees. You can cancel anytime. Bambee's dedicated HR managers will know your business and your specific concerns no matter what state you're in. With Bambee, you'll have peace of mind and never worry about HR compliance again. For the first time ever, Bambee is offering a free trial at Bambee.com/Gordon. B-A-M-B-E-E bambi.com/Gordon. This is their best offer ever. Start your free trial at bambi.com/Gordon.
Hey, thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday. It's time now for the mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we know a lot of things cost more than they used to, and that apparently goes for parking. A parking space in an affluent Hong Kong neighborhood sold for $1.3 million recently, a new world record. The parking space at the luxury Mount Nicholson residential project was sold for $1.3 million to an unidentified buyer. The price for the 134.5-square-foot parking space amounts to about $9,500 per square foot. The sum beats the previous world record for the most expensive parking spot, a $969,000 space sold at the 79-story Hong Kong office tower, The Center, in October of 2019. And I remember us talking about that being sort of blown away mm-hmm. that a space sold for almost $1 million. Now it's, you know, it's what, not even 2 years later, and we're already up $400,000 from that price.
Do you imagine? I'd want to share that part. I think I might sell the unit I live in.
Yeah.
And live in the parking space
right.
with friends and try to split the cost. They just set up a couple of tents.
Yeah.
A camping table. You know, with a propane
right.
tank, you could just do your own grilling like a yeah. giant tailgate for the
it
rest of your life.
It is a decent-sized space, 134 square feet.
Yeah.
At the very least, you could, I think, kind of rent out half of it.
Probably.
Right? I think you could probably squeeze your car in and somebody
yeah.
else's beside
yeah.
you, you know, unless it's not some big SUV or something, right?
That is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I didn't have $1 million, but I would have paid a significant amount to find a parking space this weekend. I think I was telling you off-air, I was tooling around the Jersey Shore this
yeah.
weekend, and so was everybody else
right.
in New Jersey. And very, very difficult to find a parking spot. So, there's no limit to what we might shell out if we're desperate driving
right.
around enough for a parking spot.
Is that where everybody was?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I noticed,
your neighborhood was empty.
Yeah, in suburbia, like, it was just very, very quiet. I was wondering that all
yes.
8 million others were
yeah.
just at the Jersey Shore.
At yeah. least, yes, and a few others from other states. And speaking of million-dollar payouts, what would you do if you found out you won $1 million? It's a question most of us can only speculate about, but some combination of yelling, fist pumping, and jumping up and down were probably be in order. You also might have trouble concentrating on anything else for a while, which is why a Michigan man might be forgiven for his momentary brain fog. The 59-year-old man told Michigan lottery officials that he bought a ticket from a gas station in Fenton and scratched it off while filling his car with gas. He says that when he matched the number 14 and revealed the $1 million winning amount underneath, he immediately started yelling, "Are you kidding me?" He was then so excited he drove away with the gas pump still in his car.
Oof.
No word on whether his hasty exit caused any major damage to the gas pump, but he can likely afford to help pay for it after taking the $634,000 lump sum payment, which he says he plans to use to buy a house, a car, and take a vacation.
No, that's spending it.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Some people like have no plan. I gotta think
yeah.
about it a little while.
Yeah.
You know, I might trade in my car.
Right.
This guy's he's all in.
Yeah. So many
house,
of, yes,
car, vacation.
Yeah. So many of these lottery stories. Like, I'm gonna put it in the bank.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I'm gonna, you know, maybe a college fund for
right.
my kids.
Go
no,
out to
this
dinner.
This guy's gonna blow it all in about 2 weeks.
Well,
that's cool.
Those some of those videos though are scary. Like the security camera footage you
yeah.
might see when a car pulls away from a gas tank with the
oh yeah
and a fire starts
yes.
right and all that stuff.
Could have been. Does not appear to have been.
Okay.
So thankfully.
Wow. Wow. Thank you, Mike.
As a business owner, you eventually realize you can't do everything yourself, but hiring is complicated. And what if you only need part-time help? Belay, an innovative staffing solution, has successfully matched thousands of businesses with part-time virtual assistants, bookkeepers, and social media strategists. Belay offers you a virtual support team that can transform your workday. Let Belay help you juggle less and accomplish more. Just go to Belay, B-E-L-A-Y, solutions.com/deal. That's BelaySolutions.com/deal.
Thanks for being with us. Data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration show that excessive heat is responsible for the most weather-related fatalities in the U.S. during an average year. The agency says extreme heat killed an average of 138 Americans per year from 1990 to 2019. Weather threats like flooding killed 88 in the same period. Tornadoes took 65 lives. Hurricanes and tropical storms killed 45, and lightning strikes killed 41. Much of the western U.S. experienced the first heat wave of the year, with temperatures breaking 100 degrees recently. Arizona's Maricopa County reported its first heat-related death of 2021 after seeing a record high 323
heat-related deaths last year. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
President Biden and Republican Senator Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia will meet again today as they try to negotiate a bipartisan agreement on infrastructure. Biden on Friday rejected the Republicans' latest offer to add about $50 billion to their $928 billion infrastructure plan. Biden, who cut the size of his package to $1.7 trillion, told Capito he wants at least $1 trillion in new spending over current levels, but the Republican plan includes only about $250 billion over current spending.
Number two.
Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm is calling for more public-private cooperation on cyber defenses and says U.S. adversaries already are capable of using cyber intrusions to shut down the U.S. power grid. She spoke with CNN.
Even as we speak, there are thousands of attacks on all aspects of the energy sector and the private sector generally. I mean, the meat plant, for example. It's happening all the time.
Granholm says whether targets are part of the private or public sector, they shouldn't be paying ransom because that only encourages the criminals.
Number three.
A shooting at a graduation party has left at least three people dead and six others injured, the latest in a string of shootings in the Miami area. Miami-Dade Police Director Freddie Ramirez.
This violence has to stop. This is extremely frustrating. Every weekend is the same thing, and we just got to band together.
The party had just ended at a strip mall parking lot just south of Miami-Dade College around 2 a.m. Sunday. Ramirez says one or more vehicles pulled up and began firing into the crowd. Prince Harry and Meghan Markle may have stepped away from their royal duties, but family appeared to be top of mind in naming their second child Lilibet Diana, who was born Friday in California. The name pays tribute to both Harry's grandmother, Queen Elizabeth II, whose family nickname is Lilibet, and his late mother, Princess Diana. The baby, weighing in at 7 pounds, 11 ounces, is eighth in line to the British throne. 24-year-old gymnast Simone Biles has claimed her seventh U.S. title, a record, delivering another stunning performance that served little doubt the pressure surrounding her bid to become the first woman to win back-to-back Olympic championships in more than 50 years is only pushing her to even greater heights. Biles' two-day total was nearly 5 points better than runner-up Sunisa Lee and good friend Jordan Chiles.
I had to listen to you, I think, twice in my head to realize she's 24.
Yes, I know.
For sure.
She's unbelievable.
35-year-old Simone Biles. I feel like she's been around forever.
She has been.
Winning.
They start young, you know.
Right, yeah. Winning and winning. Coming up next, a missing wallet reappears after nearly half a century.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the world is throwing everything it has at you. And to succeed, you need someone to guide you through. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the tech advice to help you navigate whatever challenges you're up against and get you safely to where you want to be.
For advice on solutions like XPS 13 laptops powered by Intel Evo platform, call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for being with us. Last week, we told you about a wallet lost in Scotland that was returned 20 years later. This timing will raise your eyebrows even more. A woman in California was recently reunited with a wallet she lost in 1975. The Associated Press says Colleen Diston from Ventura, California, was in her early 20s and seeing a movie at the Majestic Ventura Theater when her wallet, containing family photos and a check for $200, dropped out of a hole in her purse. The Ventura County Star says Ms. Diston recently got the wallet back after an employee who was remodeling the historic theater found it in a crawl space. Though the wallet had no money, it did have a Grateful Dead concert ticket from 1973, some old photos, and Ms. Diston's driver's license that expired in 1976. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.